Welcome to the Junior MBA Coaches Corner with your host, Jay Billis. Today, Jay welcomes Los Angeles Clippers assistant coach, Rex Kalamian, and top NBA and WNBA skills trainer, Alex Bazell. Now, here is your host, Jay Billis.
Welcome to Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Our topic today is skill development, and we are thrilled to have with us two of the finest teachers in the game. We've got Rex Kalamian of the Los Angeles Clippers, 25 years in the NBA with seven different teams. He's seen it all, both on the floor and off in NBA basketball and all through the game. And we've also got Alex Bazell, who's one of the top skills trainers in the game for both NBA and WNBA players. And I want to start off, guys, with this this idea of something I heard years ago from a mentor of mine and someone I know you're very familiar with, the great Pete Newell, who used to say that basketball is overcoached and undertaught. And I'd like to get both of you to comment on this. And I'm going to play devil's advocate with you, because when I travel around the country and I deal with youth coaches, high school coaches, there's somewhat of a familiar refrain, and that is they're skeptical of skills development coaches. And so I'm going to ask you to respond to this. That skills development coaches, they only teach one-on-one moves. It's all individual and everything's after the catch. How do you respond to that? Alex, let's start with you.
Well, you know, with that, there's a baseline of just individual skill set a player needs to have. Now, the way I go about it is I try to put players in the positions that they're going to be within the flow of their offense. It's a lot easier when you have worked with a player, you have film on that player that you can kind of put them in different spots. When it comes to youth players, it's more about teaching IQ based plays, right? Not just, okay, here's a footwork of a move you can do. Well, here's a situation and where this can be effective. That's the way I like to teach. And especially with younger minds, it's not trying to dumb it down so much, but it's giving them a level of exploration within their minds. It's letting them be more creative within what we're teaching. So not putting kind of a box in what we're trying to do, but getting them to think at a higher level in terms of what's coming next.
And Rex, when you hear sort of skill development for youth and the complaint from coaches, and again, I'm playing devil's advocate here to get you guys to debunk some of these notions, but you'll hear all of it's 1-on-0. It doesn't transfer into 5-on-5. So can you talk a little bit about really youth development right now and teaching kids how to play versus just teaching individual moves?
Well, I think that's a huge part of the game, teaching how to play the game prior to even stepping on the floor and playing 5-on-5. I think Alex mentioned it, talking about passing, shooting, dribbling, even defensive body position. All these things, all these fundamentals and skills are undertaught, unfortunately. I think through youth programs, AAU, and maybe even sometimes a player only attends college for a year and these things aren't taught. So when they come to an NBA level, some of their skill work is not there yet. And you really have to, you know, kind of rewind and start with a player from the basic level. And I think that if we can get the e-coach videos are tremendous for this, because if we could get the youth basketball players and the coaches to start seeing the fundamental and the skill development of what we're doing in the NBA, I think it would transition and it would produce a more well-rounded player.
Well, that's a great point, Rex. Let me follow up on that. So where do you start? I would imagine you'd start with your own personal philosophy, but how did you come up with your philosophy of teaching skill development, and where do you start with the player?
Well, my keys, I have five keys to developing a player. The first one is having a full assessment of the player. I think that whether you draft them, trade for him, sign him as a free agent, whatever it is, you have to assess, you have to go back and see what the player's strengths and weaknesses are. Secondly, is you have to build a plan for that player. So now you know his strengths or weaknesses, now you can create a plan. And the plan has to be a long-term sustainable plan. It can't be one day, one week, 1 month, or even 1 year sometimes. I think the player has to understand that this plan is going to possibly stay with you for your career. And the consistency of the plan is like tremendous, right? The third key, is a formed relationship between the coach and the player. I think that's huge. And that's when the bond and the trust comes in. Then you could really start making progress. And then the fourth thing is starting from basics. I like to start with layups, literally. Layups and close-in shots, I think that's huge. There's so much in footwork, and there's so much as a league right now. The NBA only makes 59% of their layups. And, you know, it's such a low number, and it's a skill that really needs to be taught a little bit more. And then the last thing, Jay, the last key that you touched on is called transfer. And that's where a player needs to be able to transfer from the practice court onto, from the one-on-one individual court onto the practice court, and from the practice court onto the actual arena when you're going to play a game. And sometimes there's a loss in between that. Those steps are huge. And you may be a great individual workout guy, but you can't transfer it to five-on-five, or you may be great in practice, but you can't transfer it when the lights turn on. And those steps are big for young players. And I think that they have to understand that they're, you know, they're big gaps, and you have to chop it down daily.
That's interesting. Right. Let me just follow up one second on the 59% of layups in the NBA. Is that because once you get by your initial defender, players have to be especially creative and proficient to finish over the shot blocking talent you have in the league?
Yeah, no question. Help is built in the NBA, right? We work on help all the time. So there may be a blow-by drive, but once you blow by one guy, very rarely are you going to get to the rim without seeing a second or third defender. So, like a guy like Kyrie Irving is probably the best layup maker in the NBA. He has so many different finishes that he could go to. Most guys can't go to all those different finishes. So sometimes it's an overhand layup. Sometimes it's a Euro step layup. Sometimes you have to, take it to your opposite hand to lay the ball up and in. And I think that all that stuff around the rim really needs to be worked on more with the young players. And I worked with a guy, DeMar DeRozan, who was, 8, 7, 8, 9 years in the league. And he would still start his workouts every day with close in layup making, difficult shots that he would have to make off of 1 foot, 2 feet, touch shots. And I learned from him as much as anything that how important that is, because those are the shots that he would get in a game, not a straight in layup, but something that had to be more of an acrobatic style layup sometimes to avoid the second and third defender.
Alex, how would you describe your philosophy of skill development in your coaching and teaching life? And then also, what specific skills do you think that each young player needs in order to advance in the game?
Well, in terms of my philosophy, it's very simple. There's a blueprint out there for everything, right? So for me, it's like, let's not overcomplicate the game, but the game has advanced quite a bit just in terms of skill level from now, even really until the early 2000s. You can see it in just card play. So it's trying to identify, okay, what can we take from some of these best athletes in the world and implement them at a younger level, right? That's not dependent on athleticism or size or speed. So it's first just trying to identify that into what can young players handle, which, Kobe's philosophy was always, let's throw as much at them as we can because their minds are still developing. Think about if a young kid's trying to learn a new language, right? It's way easier for them to pick it up than for you or I to try to pick up a language right now. So, in terms of what we're trying to give them, we're trying to challenge them as much as we can. But in terms of just the philosophy of it, everything's out there. We just got to find it through film and show that there's proof, right? And that's kind of how I get the buy-in from players at the top level as well. It's not my opinion. It's, hey, here's what guys have done that have led to success. Here's what you do that leads to success. How can we take little pieces from each player and kind of implement it into your game? And in terms of just the specific skill, I think Rex hit the nail on the head with finishing. We do our 15 workouts for our academies in St. Louis for our kids, and 40 minutes of it is all around the rim. And a lot of the times what you see with kids when they're working out on the driveway or even with trainers, it's they'll make this great move and go 100%, and then they ease up at the end for a layup at the rim, which, you're just not going to get. So a lot of times, instead of working from 2 feet on layups, we like to go from 4 to 6 feet, because as Rex mentioned, even, you know, in college especially, you know, there's no defense of 3 seconds. So you're just not going to get those uncontested layups in a half court situation. So we like to work on, you know, one of my favorite drills to do with kids is I have two players at the elbow, one with the basketball, let's say they're on the right elbow, and the other player defender is on their left hip. And the only player's job on defense isn't to block the shot, but it's to give them resistance to keep them out of the paint. And the offense's job is just to try to go finish. And what you see a lot is these kids end up right outside the block and they're just missing it because they haven't really worked on that touch. So that's kind of my big emphasis, like Rex is saying, is, you know, just finishes around the rim are probably a shot that you get more than anything else. So that's always a point of emphasis for younger players as well as the pros.
Alex, on the point of watching film and taking pieces of what the very best players do, how do you balance that with the idea that not every young player should be doing what Kobe Bryant did or what LeBron can do, because they're not the same kind of player? I mean, Rex made the point of having a full player assessment, but in putting together things you see from film of what the very best players do, does that always apply to players? How do you strike that balance?
No, I don't think, you know, that starts coming into play more when you get into advanced grade school, like, you know, 7th, 8th grade, they can start understanding it. And, you know, obviously when you get into high school, players start developing roles. And that's my big thing is you have to, when you're talking about a player's success, and this is the conversation a lot of times what happens with parents is because they think their kid is the next great thing, yet, you know, they're maybe the third or fourth option on their high school team. So it's like, okay, knowing that, we have to develop them in the role they're in, right? It's great if we want to shoot for that role down the line of, I want to be the 20-point-per-game scorer. That's great, you know, dreams to have. But, you know, here's the role you need to be great at right now to gain your coach's trust to, you know, work into the bigger role down the future. So, you know, that's kind of always my mentality with it. With young players, it's more about just teaching the fundamentals at a very detailed level. So, you know, like with our grade school kids, working on footwork of just pull-up jump shots, but timing of the pickup, right? So a lot of kids, when they dribble, they'll pick it up and then they'll take their 2 steps and they'll shoot. So just little stuff like that we can get them to pick the ball up as the last step hits, so they're not giving away that they're shooting too early. So, you know, there's a lot of just fundamentals that I think can get broken down a little bit more. So when the player does advance into 7th, 8th grade, they have all the baseline skills they need, but they're very advanced at those fundamentals.
Yeah, Rex, when Alex was talking about watching film, it reminded me of something I've heard you talk about before, and that's you used to work for Bill Fitch, who taught you, one, a lot about work ethic, but two, how to watch film. And when you're dealing with players, especially younger players, do you have to teach them how to watch film? And then also, as a coach, how does a young coach learn how to properly watch and evaluate film?
That's a great question. And yes, you do, as a coach, need to teach people, young people especially, how to watch film, what to look for. And I found that there's 3 ways that players learn, right? I call it VVT. It's visual, verbal, and tactile. So you could sit down with a player, open up a computer, and you teach a player what to look for in the computer. Verbally, you tell a player, and a lot of that happens during a game, right? During a timeout, when you verbally teach a player, hey, you have to move over, you have to dive, you have to do whatever you do. And then the tactile part, a lot of that is during a practice day, when you have the ability to go out and walk out onto the floor with a player and physically show them what you're talking about. So each player learns differently, but video is such a huge part of NBA growth and NBA basketball in general, watching yourself, watching your team, understanding the game and the IQ of it. And I think that you need to show the players early on, especially what they should be looking for, so that when they take the film home, and every player now has an iPad and they all take film home, when they're watching it, they know what they're watching. So even when you're not around, they could still understand what they're looking for. A lot of times for myself, I take a lot of video on my cell phone, just small clips, and I send it to players and just give them little taste. And sometimes I'll voice narrate it so that they could see what I'm talking about, and just little under 1 minute snippets of film. So it's like film to me has been a big part of my growth and development as a coach. And I know it's transcended throughout the NBA, and especially it definitely started with Bill Fitch.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point. And it's not just about the development of the player. It's also about the development of you as a coach. And I would imagine both of you consider yourselves far better coaches and teachers now than when you first started. But for youth coaches, high school coaches that are early on in their careers, what advice could you give as far as getting better as a teacher and getting better as a coach? How do young coaches do that? Alex, we'll start with you.
I think it's just being a sponge. Like for me, you know, I never try to act like I have all the answers, because as soon as I do, I don't. And like, even with Rex, his 3 points, I've just been trying to take notes, because I think it's important that even if you have a level of success that you've, you know, accomplished, there's always something more out there. And there's always different perspectives. I'm big into, you know, learning, you know, how different trainers or how different coaches, I think, you know, what Rex talked about is the relationships with the players is big, and building that trust, and, you know, learning from, you know, just watching how, you know, a guy like Gino Auriemma or Phil Jackson, how they got across from their players, Coach K, as you know, they don't treat everyone the same. And I think with player development, that's important for youth coaches to understand. There shouldn't be a cookie cutter approach to it. And, you know, every kid responds differently. And I think the notion of you can't be as hard on kids today as you could back then, I think there's a little bit of – it's a little just false. I think there's a lot of parents that are wanting their kids to kind of be pushed. So that's kind of the way I look at it, is there's always something more out there. And as long as we can keep growing in what we're doing, it, you know, it's all about the players, you know, improving in the end. So I look at it that way. You know, my goal is just to try to help each individual player I come across. And as soon as I stop getting better, I've kind of put a cap on how much better they can get.
Well, before I ask Rex the same question, let me follow up, Alex. You know, you mentioned, especially with youth coaches, how does parent involvement work? And maybe their team coach versus their skill coach. What's that interaction like? Do you have parents watching your workouts and dealing with the players afterwards? You know, how do you balance all that?
I tell the parents up front, listen, you know, when they're here in the gym with me, I don't even like kids looking out of the corner of their eye for the parents' approval, right? That you get that a lot in games, a lot in workouts. So, you know, I tell the players, listen, when you guys step in the gym with me, you're 100% focused on what we're doing, what we're trying to accomplish. You know, when you guys leave, I usually try to tell the parents, give them at least an hour. You know, if you have some suggestions of, hey, you need to try to do this, you know, everyone has that. My dad was very involved with me, but we found a great balance, and it was healthier for our relationship. So what I tell the parents is, you know, you probably know way more about your kid than anyone who's going to coach or train him. So we're not arguing that, but I'm telling you, for the betterment of your relationship for the long term of this, try to be dad and mom as much as you can, more than coach or trainer. And I think that, you know, the biggest thing is what I've learned is, you know, when you step into a gym and you're working out Kobe Bryant's daughter, and I think Kobe's probably the most skilled player of all time, and he doesn't say a word. Like, I think he probably said on one hand the amount of times that he would step in and try to teach something. You know, it was very, very few when I was working out Gigi. And, you know, if a guy like that can wait and just be dad and just be, you know, videoing and proud of what his daughter's doing, why can't everyone be that way? And I think he understood that, you know, it was just for the betterment of, he knew that there was a line that needed to be drawn from Kobe Bryant the player to Kobe Bryant the parent.
Hey, Jay,
great lesson for everybody. Yeah. Yeah,
can
please.
Can I comment,
Rex,
on what Alex said? I think it's really important that, you know, the immediate growth and sustaining growth of a player, even at the NBA level, is total collaboration of all the people around him. It's assistant coaches, player development coaches, trainers, medical staff, everybody understanding the path that player is on, so that if anybody, any one of those departments touch that player, they're all funneling him down the same way rather than splitting him different ways. And even a guy like Alex's job of player development, maybe in the off season or during the season when the player's not in the gym with his team, it's so important to bring Alex into the loop as to what the coaches expect of that player so that everybody's working together, because Alex has a very important development job with players when they're not with their team or with their coaches. And I think it's really important that, you know, everybody collaborates together.
That's a great point. It's just so interesting. In my experience of late, you know, I run a camp during the summer. I've brought that up time after time about collaboration and the skills development coaches working in tandem with the high school coach or whatever it may be. But it's remarkable how many times, it's not every time, how many times I run into this idea of territoriality, that one or the other wants to be the lead dog and everything. And it really requires a ton of communication, I believe, that everybody has to have the best interest of the player, number one. But Rex, to my earlier question, what advice would you give to a young coach on not only skill development of players, but especially skill development of the coach to get better as a teacher and get better as a coach?
Well, it's a great question because it's asked of me a lot, especially with people just trying to break into the business. And my answer to that is that you should go out and work as many camps and clinics and be around as much basketball as you possibly can. You know, going to the best clinics, like Tim Gergovich has a great clinic in the summertime where he invites NBA players, NBA coaches, and everybody gets out there and they all have different ways of coaching and presenting and different things that they're showing. And I think stuff like that is so instrumental for young coaches trying to break in, understanding their style, understanding what they're teaching, how they should be teaching certain stuff. I think the e-coach is so important because you could actually just click on it and figure out what coaches are teaching, how they're teaching it, what style you like. And I think there's a lot of different things that people could choose from. They just need to figure out what avenues they want to take, but definitely going and watching clinics. And then you have to do it yourself, because there's nothing like experience. There's nothing like getting on the floor and coaching. And if you have to grab, an AAU team or a junior high team or a high school team, do it. Like, you know, as much as you can, get out there and teach so that your voice can be heard.
Well, Rex, speaking of eCoach, it is a fabulous resource for young coaches and old coaches alike, and also for players, I believe. I'm a subscriber. I get the emails every day and watch all the videos. And you've got a video that you've chosen from somebody you work with closely, the great Doc Rivers, on early offense. And let's take a look at that now.
Everyone, I'm Doc Rivers of NBA Coaches and E-Coach. I'm here to show you our early offense. We call it Slice. We use this as a signal. Let's get started. All right. I have my five guys. This is the five and the four. And the five and the four are interchangeable. One, two, and three are interchangeable, okay? In transition, one thing that's really important is that we flatten out the defense, all right? We don't want to stop. If I threw it ahead to you, then I would go flat, all right? But once I get to this area, deep corner here, you're straight head under the basket. I'm pushing it up right here, and I'm looking. We're trying to strike early. We want to score in the first 5 seconds if we can, all right? And so if our big has an advantage because he ran the floor, we want to get him the ball, okay? So let's do that part. Once we hit, then we split. Big, your first job is not to be a scorer when you catch the ball. Your job is to be a passer. All right, see if we can get a layup. See if we can get something. Let's say you can't post. Let's step up for a pick and roll. All right, let's run it. Step up, roll, nice. There it is, great action. Good job. Now one thing with the roll, because we're always worried about spacing, we're assuming that this four is a great shooter, all right? So on the row, let's get back to the row part. This spacing part is really important. You have it, you're here. when you throw it out, you're stepping up, all right? Step up, go deep corner. You have to follow this because he's coming off. Go off. You're rolling. Roll, roll, roll. Keep going. You're looking there, all right? But you may have this, this, and this. All right, let's do it again and one more time. Same way. Yeah. Nice. Nice. Split. Nice. Come off. Roll. Roll. Nice. And that's where we play from, all right? That's a catch and shoot or an attack, and now we have four out, one in. Spacing is the key, all right? That's obviously a simple action. You know, we're looking to strike early. Our bigs, we want running. One key with bigs, bigs always want to run out. We want to run straight line. If you tie a rope from the front of the basket to the other front of the basket, we tell our first big to try to run under that rope to save steps. Because if we can get a layup, we'll take it. Also, when the big runs, sometimes it creates a mismatch. The one or the two may have to pick the big up, which leaves one of our shooters wide open. Once we throw it to the post, unless he's deep. If our big is deep, go to work. If he's outside of the paint, we want him to be a passive first, look to see if we can get a layup from one of the cuts, and then we want him to be a step-up pick-and-roll guy to get spacing.
So, Rex, what stands out to you about that, other than Doc Rivers is a fabulous teacher of the game?
First of all, I'm just so excited. I can't wait to get back in the gym and hear his voice and watch his teaching. It's great to see that. But you know, Doc teaches a lot of the same stuff offensively every day, and it's about spacing, which you heard him say four or five different times. It's about timing. It's about driving and attacking the basketball. He really likes drivers and attackers, like guys that could ignite the offense and draw multiple defenders. And the last thing is about sharing the ball. And those are repetitive things that we go over every day. But the most important thing with your early offense and what he showed was the spacing of it, because you want to give players, and this is what Doc does so well, is he puts players in their best position to be their best. And he creates lanes, he creates angles, and he also creates situations where when somebody's driving the basketball, if it's Lou Williams or Kawhi Leonard, they know where the players on the floor are going to be around them. And they know where their outlets are. And I think we just saw that in that short clip.
Well, the point about sharing the ball, one of the things that impresses me most in watching NBA teams, aside from the spacing, is the way they move the ball. I believe, and I haven't quantified all of this, but I think there are more passes per possession in the NBA than at any level of basketball. And Alex, in skill development, how do you work on passing and the importance of passing with young players especially?
So with young players, it's more about reading when help is going to be where. So a lot of times, yeah, young athletes get in trouble from over dribbling or dribbling too deep into the gaps to where it, you know, their angles are taken away. So a lot of times what I like to do is kind of a two-on-two drill, very similar to one I did at the start, where I have a kid guarding on someone's hip. And as soon as they attack, the help has an option to bluff or step in and try to get a steal or get a charge. So, and the ball handler's job is to react. As soon as the defender is over helping and moving the opposite direction, that's when we want to kick it. So it's getting players to understand that, you know, these passes here, they're not able to happen underneath the 3-point line. So a lot of times what we like to do is work on kick passes with our arm going this way, left hand, right hand, coming off ball screens, making hook passes. I think it's important that players understand that based on where defenders are going to be, that kind of creates the situations of what passing angles are going to be possible. And in terms of the NBA level, I like to look at not this pass of what's going to happen, but what can happen after that. So, an example is, you know, Kyrie and I were going through film, and it was, he was coming off a drag screen towards the middle, and there was a help side defender at the nail over helping, and Joe Harris was on the wing. Now, Joe may not have gotten that shot off, but what would have happened is you now create a mismatch for the next rotation. So it's getting, you know, professionals especially, they're as talented as ever, but it's getting them to see two or three passes away that you may not get the assist, but you know, the amount of pressure you put on the defense in a rotation situation is much more difficult. So that's what I like to stress at that level.
When you're dealing with the youth level, is there a challenge of a player mindset when they come into skill development that they pass after all other options are exhausted?
No, I think that, you know, it's more about just accountability, honestly, you know, holding kids accountable, saying, hey, that's the right play right here. You need to make the right basketball play. So, you know, I'm big into, we do our skill development in the last 15 minutes, I let them play. And I don't really put restrictions, but I will stop and teach. And I say, okay, here's the situation. Here's what you missed. All right, so drive again, same help, pick up the ball. What do you see? He's like, oh, well, Jimmy's open in the corner. Well, yeah, he's been open for the last 5 seconds. So it's just getting young players to say, okay, that, you know, I understand now. So it's not so much calling a kid out and be like, you need to make the pass, because they're like, well, what pass? It's taking them back, putting them in that situation and say, here's why we want to make this play here. So that's really what it's about.
You know, Rex, I'm probably guilty of this just in the time we've been talking, but you know, you say skill development and the first thing you think of is offense. How about skill development on defense with players?
Absolutely. And right now I'm coaching the defense for our Clipper team and for Doc. And I really think that we don't put enough emphasis in our individual workouts on defense. You know, there's so much that goes into body positioning and where to be, how to move and anticipate, like Alex is talking about, the next pass. You have to do the same thing defensively. You have to anticipate where the ball is going to go and be ready to move on the pass, not necessarily on the catch. I talk a lot defensively about doing, I kind of made up a word called unstatable. Do something defensively that's unstatable, meaning plug a gap, take a charge, be in position so that there is no easy drive to the rim. Be the first to a loose ball, get a deflection, all these little things defensively. Unfortunately, we don't talk much about them really, I think, at any level until you really start talking about defense. So player workouts, skill workouts, a lot of them are geared more towards offense, but there's so much on the other end of the floor. And to be a well-rounded player and to be a two-way player, you need to have an IQ for both and be able to sustain both ends, offense and defense.
And the game has changed defensively, especially in your league over the years. I mean, it used to be that you would guard the three-point line, maybe behind the three-point line with your toes on it. Now you've got to be outside the three-point line to start, right, when you first get in your stance?
The game has changed so much, and it's so important for us to understand that it's changing and where it's going, and it's gone so much to three-point shooting that – it's your defense has now been pushed out a little bit more. Your defense, you're having to guard offensive players who are 2 and 3 feet behind the offensive behind the 3-point line now. And offensively, that gives them so much more power to be able to catch and shoot, catch and drive. It gives them more driving lanes, and it's so much more important that the foundation of your defense behind the basketball is tight. They're playing with length. They're ready to help, and everything is in a shell behind the basketball. And that's what we teach a lot, not only on ball defense, but positioning off the ball and understanding how good the player is and what the player's skills are on the floor. If it's a shooter or it's a driver, being able to anticipate the next play. And that's something that Doc talks about a lot, is anticipation of what's going to happen next.
How about, Rex, in your initial stance as a defender? So if you're guarding somebody outside the three-point line, you've got your heels on the three-point line in a stance. What about your hand position?
Well, we always talk about having a stick hand up. So that stick hand hopefully is clouding the vision of the passer. It's also a tool that if the pass is made, and we talk a lot about deflections, There's a correlation between, for us, 20 or more deflections, we're winning a basketball game because deflections are turning into steals. And for us, it's a solid no middle stance. We don't necessarily want to push anybody to the baseline or push them to the middle. We want to guard the basketball. And I think in the past, I have taught pushing a certain way. And what that does is it really opens up kind of the floodgates for the offensive player. Now we're in more of a squared stance and we have active hands on the basketball. And it starts with your stick hand and then your opposite hand is ready to take any type of dribble. But it's like all that is those are parts that we try to hit in training camp and every day to try to put the whole thing together. And it starts with individual defense on the ball, and then it goes to the four players off the basketball and being in position and being ready to move on the pass.
Last question for both of you, and I'd like you both to comment on this. Alex, we'll start with you. And that is the demeanor of the coach in skill development. You mentioned earlier that you think, you know, you can still get on player, today's player, that might be a little bit of a myth. But what's your demeanor like in skill development? How does that differ from maybe your demeanor you might have if you were coaching an entire team in a team setting?
I think it comes down to patience, you know, especially if, you know, a player starts, you have an entire offseason with them, you're not going to accomplish everything in one workout. So it's understanding that there's a level of patience that needs to be had with the player. And then there's an open, you know, in terms of coaching, it's more of one-sided. Here's what you need to do. Here's what we need you to do for our team to be successful. Whereas player development, the dialogue has to be much more open. And it has to be, you know, are you uncomfortable with this? Why? You know, this is what makes you great. And here, you know, why is it that you're more comfortable coming off this way than this way? And then it becomes more of a realization with the player where they're coming out and saying, yeah, I'm just not good enough at this part of my game. You know, now it's them saying it rather than me saying it. And I think that's powerful for young kids to understand is, you know, it's not a mystery. Everyone needs to work on their weak hand. But until you actually, you know, openly say it, you're like, man, I'm smoking all my left-hand layups. Okay, well, you know, here's the solution. We can work on that. We have time. So I just think in terms of player development, you have much more time with it. You just have the ability to keep an open dialogue and keep it as extremely patient as possible without putting too much pressure on youth athletes to perform right then and there. And, you know, what I always tell the kids, it's like, hey, I could really care less if you're the best seventh grader in the country. It's not my goal. My goal is to get you prepared. If you want to play in college, here's what we have to accomplish, but here's all the time we have to do it. And it doesn't have to be all this summer even. So it's just getting players to understand it's such a long battle, but every day you need to wake up and say, okay, here's what I need to accomplish today to reach my end goal when it comes time. Their real coaches come in the gym and start evaluating you.
Yeah, Rex, I've always known you to be a positive energy coach, you know, to bring positive energy to the floor every day with the players. Are you the same every day?
I try to be, Jay. The NBA season is long. It's, you know, eight months or sometimes more. And I think that if you come in with the same attitude and the same just kind of overall positive outlook, it reflects upon the players. And especially when you are coming in and seeing the same player every day, and you may be on that player every single day about the same mistake he's making. And you have to find different ways to coach it. And sometimes maybe one avenue you're taking isn't the right way. Maybe the words that you're using aren't the right words. So you have to change up a little bit. But the one thing I try to always bring every day into the gym is a positive outlook, a positive attitude, regardless of where our team is in that particular point in time during the season. And it may even be in the summertime when guys love coming in the summertime. And sometimes during the season, they may not want to come in depending on what's going on with their bodies and how the team is playing, and they really don't want to be on the floor. So you have to get those guys onto the floor and not only get them onto the floor, but be productive that day. And for me, that's why a plan is so important. And I preach consistency with young players all the time because I learned from Kevin Garnett years ago that having a consistent workout routine will pay dividends down the road, and staying with that consistency is huge. because you know the NBA and really basketball in general isn't about what you're doing right now. It's about what you could do to grow and get better and remain consistent for the long run. NBA basketball, for sure, it is broken into four seasons. It's the summertime. It's the preseason, which is about 4 or 5 weeks now. It's the regular season, which could be 6 or 7 months. And then it's the postseason, if you're lucky enough to get there. And so you have four seasons of basketball, and you may change your philosophies a little bit as to how you're developing somebody throughout those four different seasons. You're working on different things maybe throughout those four different seasons, but your attitude and your consistency and the positivity has to remain the same every day.
Well, I lied to you guys about the last question. That wasn't the last question. This is, you know, we've all had more free time than we expected with all this COVID-19 quarantine and all that. So I want to ask each one of you, what is one thing you have discovered in quarantine? For me, I've discovered the Peloton and Netflix. I didn't watch a lot of Netflix before this, but I watch a lot now. Alex, what have you discovered in some of your free time?
So, you know, I'm engaged right now, and my fiance actually plays in the WNBA. So we've gotten to spend more time now than we ever have because, you know, her season's in the summer. I'm busy in the summer. Then she may go play overseas. Like, she was over in China and then came back, right, when all the craziness started to happen. So I learned that my jurisdiction on the court ends as soon as it's – I get a say for about 1 hour each day, and the rest of the day is kind of hers. So it's been great. It's been like really getting to know, you know, one another. We're really getting prepared for married life. So,
well, that's great. Congratulations, Rex. What have you discovered?
Well, I would probably say that I've discovered my kids don't like my cooking very much. And with all the meals that we're having to eat in, I've become the cook so much more in the past 3.5 months than I have in the past 10 years. I've made more meals, so and I've done it with the help of YouTube. Also, I've clicked on some cooking videos to see how to make certain things. But I think I'm going to try to stick to basketball and not try to rearrange things around the house and do different things. Because every time I move something, I've realized that I'm doing something that I should not be doing. Just sit down, watch television, stay out of the way, basically.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us this week on Junior NBA Coach's Corner. It was a pleasure, and thanks for sharing all the knowledge. Great, and please stay safe and healthy.
Thanks, Jed.
For more coaching resources, including our curriculum, please visit juniornba.com. I want to thank our friends at the NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing instructional content from their eCoach basketball video library to give our viewers an insider's perspective about how NBA coaches teach the topic we're focusing upon each week. For more information and to access the coaches video library, go to eCoachBasketball.com.
Next week on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner, Jay welcomes Charlotte Hornets assistant coach Jay Hernandez and top NBA skills trainer and co-founder of Unlimited Potential Basketball, Packy Turner. Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Jay each week for the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.